Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Cut. I don't think they do.
Just had a close-cropped blonde hair.
I think that was part of the appeal as well.
Carter, 6'3", 250. The Lance Zierlein grade just is really good. It's Pro Bowl talent, but it's not like his highest give-out grade.
All right, time to talk to Greg Brown, Pirates announcer, after they put a 10 spot on the Nationals last night, came back from that sweep in Cincinnati with a win, and looking to make it two in a row tonight against Washington with Mitch Keller on the mound. Greg, we've got Emmanuel Valdez again hitting cleanup after, yes, he did drive in some runs, but he can't catch a baseball. That happened twice. I mean, as someone that watches every game and cares about this team,
it is
a source of much frustration that this guy continues to play, and that I hear the GM tell you that they've got more talent at the highest levels than ever before, and yet someone who literally, diehard Pirates fans, did not know who this guy was, he plays every night in a prominent spot in the lineup at first base. It's driving me crazy.
Andrew, you're the greatest. It's that's where they are right now. Until Horowitz is ready, they've got some patchwork to do, I guess. Valdez has certain value. They made the trade for him this winter. You look at his career numbers offensively, got some pop, a left-handed hitter.
He's a career 233 hitter with a 288 on base percentage.
That means nothing
What happened to OPS?
OPS 686.
Wait, no, are you talking about the big league level?
Yeah, career in the big leagues.
No, I said professional, minor leagues. He's got an 800 OPS, doesn't he, in the minors?
Well, I mean, Matt Gorski's got pop in the minor leagues, and that guy can't friggin'. No, Gorski can't sniff the Pirates big league roster.
Well, you talked about needing to fill in somebody at first base, and he's got I'm looking now. He's got a dozen homers, part-time player, parts at 2 years, not a full-time guy with Boston, but for a short-term fix, it's not ideal, but. This is kind of where they are right now.
But why can't we see a Gorski? Why can't we see a York now that he's back healthy? Why can't we see someone that, we've heard of as maybe a potential long-term, big-picture part of the Pirates, Greg?
Well, maybe we will if this lasts much longer in terms of Horowitz not being ready and if Valdez, can't be competitive in the batter's box. I mean, you'll certainly take last night from him if he's anything like that.
Besides the part about not catching the ball, I agree.
Well, okay, I understand. No doubt, those are two misses. There's no question about that. He's made some decent plays over at first base last night, hopefully an aberration. But, you'll certainly take that offensively. If he can do that offensively, you'll accept a below average.
I'm worried, though, about the offensive performance, Greg. I think they got a one-game fighting necklace bump. And now that the fighting necklaces are out there, I don't know how they follow that up tonight.
Well, what if they win tonight? What if they score some runs again tonight?
They do it for five or six games. I'll be wearing them on the air by Friday.
Oh, there's a deal. Well, hey, you should watch our TV open tonight, guys.
Why, you've got one already?
Oh, they're going to have fight necklaces all over themselves.
I'm just saying you should watch it. Yep.
Here's another one I don't get. So Ben Cherington said that Canario reminds him of Teoscar Hernandez, who's a huge part of the Dodgers lineup and a World Series winning team. He compares the guy to that player. And then he says on Sunday, but, you know, there's not an opening for him to play here. Greg, you got Tommy Pham and Jack Sawinski out there. If there's not an opening in Pittsburgh, there's not an opening anywhere else in the big leagues. I don't get that. Play the young guy with power.
Well, yeah, that's I don't have an answer for you there. They want Pham out there, and I guess he takes the ABs or Kutch. Sawinski, they don't want him. I mean, Sawinski hasn't played since Friday.
But if you think guy can be Teoscar Hernandez, who cares about those guys? If that's what you think the dude's ceiling is, his potential, that would be gigantic.
Maybe we'll see him running out there for a while. I mean, I think he's looking. He admitted that today, just in the media confab in the press conference room about 15 minutes ago. Someone asked him about O'Neill Cruz. We asked him about that on his pregame show last night, and even on this past road trip about all the different guys he's tried at the leadoff spot.
Yep.
And he admitted, he said, Shelton, and he admitted that he's just, I mean, in so many words, he's just searching for something, anything, to jumpstart the offense. So I think he's just, for lack of a better term, Andrew, I think he's throwing guys out there, hoping something sticks, something works, whether it's the fighting necklace or whether it's O'Neill Cruz leading off, or whether it's Enmanuel Valdez at first base, anything to jumpstart this offense, get it going, because we said this so much last year, and it's so true, that if they score just a few runs, this pitching staff is good enough to win more games than last year. It's good enough to reel off a bunch of wins in a row. The bullpen, as we said in this offseason, the hope was it was going to be better than last year so far, early, very early. But 17 games in, it sure looks like this is a much better bullpen. So, geez, if you score some runs and you play some defense, you're going to win a lot more ball games.
Brownie, one of the guys that was supposed to help them score more runs that a couple of years ago I think people would have said is going to be a middle-of-the-lineup type of guy for them, even if he had some flaws. You know, he's a three true outcomes guy. Again, I have to go to Jack Sawinski here. He's one for the month of April. And I guess I try to look for signs with him that he's having what I would call quality at-bats, and I just see very little of that. I mean, what is your kind of sense of what they might feel or what's going to happen with him moving forward here? Because it's hard to watch, and it's not because I'm mad or frustrated. It's because he's so far down in it right now, I almost don't feel like he can get out of it.
Yeah, I don't know. Chris, you know, the whole thing, go back to the approach in spring training where, you know, he was aggressive in the strike zone. He was not timid.
Like just see ball, hit ball seems like the approach for him, doesn't it? Hey, Jack, go up there. If it looks good, just swing as hard as you can.
And unfortunately, right at this moment, it looks like he's in that funk that you saw him in, you know, last year. It goes back to this thing about the idea that they need that offense, and they know what's in there. It's such a fine line with baseball. I was thinking about this, you know, all the questions about Bob Nutting, what does he do, where this team is, especially going into last night after the sweep at the hands of the Reds. From a team overall perspective, from an individual perspective, it's what fascinates me about this sport of baseball, because it's so different than any of the others, because it is every single day for the most part. It is such a grind. And what is, it's such a fine line between ending a guy's, not necessarily career, but time in the big leagues and moving on, and patience that might allow him to get out of it, whether he's in the starting lineup or whether he's on the major league roster. Maybe a bad example, but it's the one that comes to mind, was Rowdy Tellez. And I'm not suggesting that Sawinski is in the same boat by any stretch, because Tellez was a free agent, and come heck or high water, it seemed as though they were going to sink or swim with him and keep him out there. And there were times, let's face it, the three of us and everybody watching the Pirates last year could feel it, that any moment they were going to cut ties with Rowdy Tellez, despite the fact that they had signed him as free agent as that you went deeper into the season. And lo and behold, for I don't know what the stretch was, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it seemed like a couple of months, he was the guy that he was with the Brewers 2 or 3 years prior, the reason they signed him. And, you know, again, I don't know what the brass is saying, you know, behind closed doors with a guy specifically like Sawinski, but I know what we saw in spring training. I know what we saw his first 2 years in the big leagues. Even though he struck out a ton, he provided that power that is lacking in this particular lineup right now. And I just don't think they want to give up right now. Give him a chance and hope he catches fire and hope he gets back to what he was, excluding last year.
Greg Brown, Pirates announcer. Let's see if they can keep the mojo going from last night, and we'll see if those necklaces can keep it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to hold you to that promise that if they win, what is it, 4 in a row, you're going to wear them on the air?
Yeah, I'll wear one Friday. Absolutely.
If they win 4 in a row, I'll absolutely wear one Friday. I just won't be on the air. I'll be in Nashville, but I'll be wearing one.
Okay. All right, guys.
See you, Greg.
I'll see
you. There you go. Greg Brown, everybody.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can choose the TV you want with DirecTV.
So now they can pick out their favorite entertainment when they sign up and save money?
You mean if you like sports,
you can get a sports pack.
What about entertainment?
Entertainment pack.
It's like finding an old pizza with your favorite toppings.
Which for me would be pineapple and toenails.
Pineapple?
Pay for the TV you want, not the TV you don't.
Genre packs starting at $34.99 a month. Visit DirectTV.com for more information. New residential customers only. Local channels vary by market. Services renew monthly unless you cancel online. Credit card required. Restrictions apply.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Tuesday, that means it's usually draft talk with Ryan Wilson from CBS Sports, Carnegie Mellon Zone. But he has CBS duties today, so he's off pinch hitting another Pittsburgh draft guru, Audibles and Analytics Pod, where he has been diving into the NFL draft for months, covers the NFL draft 365, frequent guest on the Mina Kimes podcast. John Ledyard with us here on the Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service. John, thanks for being with us. Dane Brugler has Shedeur Sanders as his 34th overall prospect. Matt Miller over at ESPN, who they're grooming to take Mel Kiper's job, has him 25th. Where do you have him ranked?
Yeah, that seems about as high as I'd go, 25 maybe, probably a little closer to where Dane has him. I think this is if you're talking from the neck up, I think he's a quarterback that I trust a lot. I think the physical skill set is where I find him to be a bit lacking as a prospect. And I think that will matter. That in terms of, and his play style, I would say just a little bit of a relaxed play style, not as much urgency as maybe you want from this position. I like the relaxedness and that he has poise, but sometimes it leads to really slow decision making. That's a hard thing to overcome when you're not an elite athlete at this position. You don't have an elite arm. You can't really play out of structure in an elite way. Like, he's not a guy that's going to make crazy great throws on the run or anything like that. So I think the tool set just has me a little bit worried more than anything else.
John, I have a ton of questions about Shedeur, so I'll try to get through as many as I can. He got sacked a ton, and we know that Colorado's line in front of him was bad. But we also know that not every sack is created equal. How many of those, mm-hmm. when you'd put on the tape, were, hey, Shedeur could have gotten this ball out. This isn't on his line. This is on him. How much is the takes too many sacks a viable knock, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. You know, not all sacks are created equal. When you watch the tape of him, I think his feet just being really unsettled, a lot of drifting in the pocket, a lot of moving back as he gets the ball, as he gets the snap, a lot of not setting his feet before he throws. And so maybe that's a general uncomfortableness of the line. I think it's just how he plays. I think he just sort of plays that way. He plays this style where he likes to drift around. He likes to move kind of off his landmarks. And what that did is that made life really difficult for his tackles specifically, because they kind of improved the angles for edge rushers. They didn't really have to turn and bend the whole corner to get to him. They just had to really run high and run around tackles while tackles move backwards. That's difficult to do. So he made life harder for the offensive line. He also bailed them out of some situations because of his improvisational skill. So he deserves some credit for that, too. The offensive structure in general at Colorado was completely awful, nothing like what he'll play with in the NFL. So there is so much projection involved that if the tools were really good, I think I'd be really high on him. But because they aren't, I don't think he's this great athlete. I think his ceiling, really, is probably his best comparison as a player, is Brock Purdy in the NFL, where I think there's a lot of kind of drifting and moving in the pocket. And if everything hits and you're in an offense with like five elite players, you know, you could also be really good. But I think he needs like kind of this perfect infrastructure to be at his best. And even maybe at his best, if you ask him to carry a group, I don't know that that's going to be in the skill set. So I think there's a real path for him to be a solid starter in the NFL. I just don't know that. I think everything would have to be perfect for him to like have success beyond his own skill set.
John, can you quantify his arm talent? We know he's accurate, but like, so we had a caller, I'll just cut to the chase here, who kind of got on my case earlier in the show saying, why isn't this guy getting comped to Joe Burrow? We know Burrow's a super processor before the snap. We know Sanders is really good before the snap. He knows what he's looking at. He's a coach's kid, etc. And he said, well, his arm, I mean, they're probably pretty comparable. Burrow doesn't have a great arm. To me, that's short-selling Burrow and overselling Sanders, but I want to know from you, when you actually put the arm on tape, like, how weak, average, arm strength-wise are we talking about here with this guy?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a worse arm than Burrow's. I agree with Burrow doesn't have an elite arm. I think with Burrow, you have elite anticipation, and so that ability to play fast from the pocket, and it's all from the pocket, is really, really important part of his evaluation. And so that's a big difference, I would say, is that when you don't have a great arm, throwing early is more important because the window is going to close And so you have to anticipate it. And so Burrow, I think, is a little bit of a better arm than Sanders. And then also I would say he anticipates much better. Throws, makes decisions much faster. Now, Sanders' offense didn't really ask him to – I mean, it's RPOs, it's screens, it's go balls. There's not a lot of opportunities to throw with anticipation. So I won't take that off the table for him as something he can show more of in the NFL. In terms of his arm strength, you mentioned it. It isn't a great arm. And I think the biggest way that shows up, a lot of people look for a distance throw, and they say, well, he can, people said his arm was weak. He can throw it 60 yards in the air. Almost everybody can throw it 60 yards in the air. It's driving the ball with velocity to the intermediate and deep portions of the field. He really struggles to do it. If you watch him drive the ball to those areas of the field, some of this may be related to his feet, so perhaps some of it's fixable, but he really struggles to get the ball there on time. Receivers often have to wait for the ball. They often have to come back and catch the ball as it flutters. Oftentimes the ball would nosedive, sort of be at their feet. So those things concern me a lot in that it will just take throws off the menu. He just won't physically be able to accomplish plays that more talented quarterbacks can make. So it ups the challenge for him, and the rest of the rest of the gamut of throws becomes greater because the standard is basically kind of perfection there, where I don't think of any throw as being off the table for Joe Burrow because he can make those throws. So that, to me, is the biggest difference, is that I just think things won't be on the menu.
John Ledyard, Pittsburgh's draft guru, our guest. Who is the quarterback that makes the most sense for the Steelers in this draft?
Next question. Just kidding. I don't know that there honestly is one, a great answer for this, guys. Like, I mean, I wouldn't take one in the first round in this draft. Okay. You really want to be the team that takes the quarterback in the 20s twice, like, to be your next franchise quarterback? There just isn't a great track record. Like, the high-value guys go early, and if there is one quarterback off the board and it's Cam Ward by the time the Steelers draft, that tells you a lot about what every other team in the draft thought that needs quarterbacks of the group. And so I don't think that's everything. That's gospel. The Steelers could be right while everyone else is wrong. It's just less likely, especially when you look at the community of draft analysts that are out there that study this full time. And if you look at the history of the consensus big board that has been tracked for over a decade now, and these things, it would just be a really risky move. And I personally just don't see it with the group to make that move. Then they don't have a second. And so then you go to the third round, and if you're talking about third round options, I probably like Will Howard from Ohio State the most of the guys that I would expect to be there. I think he really grew up a lot. I think he's really smart. I think he's mobile enough and has enough physical tools. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's unbelievable on his own. I mean, we're talking about a third round quarterback, so the expectations need to be set, I think, for that. But I would prefer him to a guy like Tyler Shough, who's older, and I think just even though he has talent for sure, but he's older. He's actually played less than everybody else, even though he's older. He has way less dropbacks than everybody else. And if you watch his tape, even though when the conditions are perfect, he can make throws, he's really hesitant to get hit. He falls off his platform all the time, guy in his face. He does not want to step into that throw. So that is where I'd be really concerned, is the NFL conditions are just not going to be perfect. So what do you do when things crumble and break down? Because they are guaranteed to do that every game. And that's why I really worry about him, was I think Howard navigated that better. Obviously, he wasn't like under pressure all the time, but I think he navigated that better toward the end of the year. So I'd probably gravitate toward him just because I don't want to spend the high value pick. And then at that range of the draft, he's probably going to be my top guy available. So if they're taking a quarterback, and they might not have a choice because they've mismanaged the offseason, they might not have a choice. But if they take one, I would prefer that it be in the third round, I think, compared to the first.
Who's your favorite player for the Steelers at pick 21, John?
That's a good question. I mean, I think there's a lot of different ways they could go, but I think I would probably say Jahdae Barron from Texas. I think this team needs a nickel so bad. I think they need somebody who can play inside, outside, who could move back, move around the defense, honestly. I think they could make you more flexible. The number one thing the Steelers need is they need defensive versatility. They're just too predictable in everything they do defensively. They have some of the most talented defensive players in the league, and every defense knows where they're going to be every snap before the ball gets snapped. So that is just a massive disadvantage.
It sounds like a Mike Tomlin critique more than a player's critique.
I think so, but I also think in today's NFL, not having that nickel who can move around. I mean, you look at some of the best defense in the league, the Cal Hamilton, the Brian Branch, even in San Francisco this past year, the Diamandre Lenore, like those types of players really move the needle for defenses these days. And so Barron's played inside, he's played outside. I think he can play in the box, even though he's a little bit smaller. He plays with a lot of instincts. I think he's a very intelligent player. He's a great communicator. He had a lot of interceptions this year. I think some of those were lucky, but ball skills, he jumps routes, he makes plays. I think he fits a lot of what they look for. He's just, I don't know that he's an unbelievable athlete. He doesn't have unbelievable size or anything like that. I don't know that he's quite on the Branch Hamilton level as a prospect, but he just fits a really big need for them. They need talent in that secondary. If the, I'm the Steelers, the best path to success this season, and we know they're obsessed with every season, trying to be as competitive as they can be, make the defense unbelievable and make it unpredictable. And to me, he's the type of piece that can help them do that.
Audible's an analytics pod. You see him on Mina Kimes. She always has him on and loves his work. So do we. John Ledyard, Ledyard NFL Draft on X. Thanks, John. Appreciate it, brother.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Well, that's an interesting name to throw out there. Also described a player who, if I recall correctly, that's what Brian Flores wanted to do with Minka Fitzpatrick in Miami, and that's what got Minka Fitzpatrick so pissed off.
Correct.
At the Dolphins. So he probably could do those things.
Also, I like
but it
John.
It sounds like he doesn't want to.
I like John saying this in just his nice turn of phrase. Do you really want to be the team taking a quarterback in the 20s for the second time in 4 years? Nicely put.
Football Debrief Time brought to you by Saloni's Bread. Over 100 years of baking experience. Great to have Donnie here with us. Donnie has a big night planned. He's going to a fancy dinner with Starkey and Bechtold because Joe lost a bet and isn't welching on it. I just told Donnie during the break he should go to this high-end place and order an Icy Light Mango. And how cool would it be if the waiter came over and had like the...
the silver platter.
It had
the
like the fancy
chilled.
Napkin and like presented it to him.
Like they've got the nice napkin draped over
yes.
their arm.
And then
have you ever seen those Stella Artois commercials? He would pour the beer, let the foam go over the top, get the little
oh,
beer
and then
knife.
They would knife it.
But I'm
yes.
saying here, maybe he pours a little bit in.
You
so you can
you swirl it
you
around.
Sample it before you authorize.
Sniff it.
Yeah.
Do you know that there is a there's a beer counterpart to a sommelier?
I believe that. What's it called?
I'm
going to
look it
up. On the side, Malzy.
Make
that your side hustle.
It's a Cicerone.
Chris Muller, Cicerone.
See, that I'm jealous of those people, though, because to be a sommelier or a Cicerone...
You
got to
go through a ton of tests.
But you have to. It's like a talent, too. You have to have this unbelievably refined palate. I don't eat melted cheese.
I honestly think my wine palate has expanded in the last couple of years. Because I used to be a guy that's like, I don't see the difference between... expensive wines and cheap wines? Now I absolutely
do. Okay, so let me ask you this. I can tell when I'm drinking a good wine. I've had enough good wine as well. Like when Alex and I went to Paso Robles a decade ago, God, I'm old, I remember going, okay, like this is awesome. This is like real wine country wine. And the thing I don't get, though, is when somebody's like, oh, yeah, this has notes of oak and cherry. That's where I still get off the ride.
I feel you on that. Yep.
I get that this tastes better than like a box of Franzia. But don't tell me there's like slightly charred pine nuts on the mouthfeel here. Come on.
Donnie aiming to go with an $85 steak tonight, folks. I think he's going to back down at the last second.
I don't think he is. I think he's going to pull the trigger. He's learned to stand up to Joe on the air and get his opinions
here,
out there. I think he's going to keep it going.
Here is the key to the whole thing. It's all about the order in which the orders get placed. If it goes to Donnie first, I think he can set the tone by making the $85 order.
I agree.
If Austin goes and gets the grilled chicken breast, and then Joe gets the New York strip, well...
New York strip's still an expensive cut. It's a nice cut.
Yeah, compare the price. It is a nice cut, but compare the price of that to the
Bechtold being
$85
not a huge steak guy, and he's going to get chicken is just a devastating loss here.
Are they going to bring him crayons and something to color on
yeah.
as well?
He'll color a few pictures. He'll color in the lines.
If you slipped the waiter a 10 and said, if you have crayons in a children's menu here, please bring
oh, well
them
that,
to him, it would be incredible.
And a Shirley Temple for you, little boy?
He better start eating some steak. The kid wants to bulk up a little bit, doesn't he?
I agree.
He?
And you don't need to do any of that. You are
bulk
51
up.
Pounds down, my friend.
I think he needs to eat the lobster mac and cheese. I think he needs to put some LBs on.
That's what he just said, bulk up.
You're not going to put on weight from eating steak, though.
Yeah, you will.
He needs to put some carbs in his body to put some pounds on.
Yeah, he should load up on the potato
so what
side of things.
Okay, let me ask you guys this question about the order of operations here. Donnie, I know we've got a football fix to get to in a second here.
A debrief.
Yeah, why do I keep saying the football fix? This has happened the last week or two. What if Joe is given chance to order first and he tries to set the wrong tone by going really skimpy with his order? Because then he's like kind of flexing, knowing he's paying. Oh, yeah, these guys aren't going to want... They'll feel bad when they see me get the 4-ounce filet.
I could see him getting the ribeye for two and then, like, doing that thing with his eyes where he's like, did you just see that move? You know what I'm talking about? That
yes.
thing that he does?
Like his eyebrows?
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't go first and try to under order here. You've got to be steadfast.
Will you
and
be cooking
gotta
this
stick
on
to
a George
guns.
Foreman grill, my friend?
Yeah, who did he say? Do you want to come over and have a cookout? And they saw a Foreman grill.
I thought it was you.
He said that to me once. I said, that's not a cookout. You have a grill that's outside.
Oh, you probably really upset him.
Well, I just told him straight away, and he was like, Mulzy, that hurts my feelings. And I said, well, you're not barbecuing. You're on a George Foreman grill outdoors.
Like special. He print an ad on and then puts the George Foreman on, plugs it in.
Seriously. It's like cooking soup in the microwave.
You
got to
give us a full report back on what you ordered.
I can't wait to hear this story.
What do you got in the debrief?
The debrief, April 15, 2025. We've talked plenty about Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter today, so why not keep it going? They are both getting their numbers retired by Colorado football, number 2 and number 12. So they are joining not a huge list of players to play for the Buffaloes to have the numbers retired. Fair or foul, given the overall careers they had simply at that school?
I'm fine with Travis Hunter. He won a Heisman. I think if you win a Heisman Trophy, any school is justified in retiring your number, even if it's in today's day and age where you're transfer portal guy
still,
for 1 year.
You still won the Heisman Trophy.
Right.
Like, because Joe Burrow transferred over from Ohio State, he's not remembered as an LSU legend.
Yeah, so he should have his number retired there. I think guys at Oklahoma automatically get statues if they win a Heisman Trophy.
They had a nice little 2 year
or
run
something
there.
Like that. But
does Sam Bradford's statue break already? Melted in hot conditions? I don't like Sanders' number being retired.
No, me neither. How could you?
How could you not retire Cordell Stewart's 10 before you would retire Shedeur Sanders' number 2?
Or how about Rasham Salaam?
I think his guy is retired.
Oh, it
okay,
is?
Okay, he is. Yeah. Okay, so I know Cordell's isn't. Listen, like
really?
Cordell's is not
Cordell
retired. So, like, Hunter is, I hate to do the same take, but
how
I kind
Eric
of...
How about Eric Bieniemy?
Eric sleeping with Bieniemy. He is not.
I'm trying to think of who else they've even had. Michael Westbrook, Charles Johnson.
So the numbers they have, Byron White, number 24, retired.
Is that Whizzer White? No,
he played back in the 1930s.
No, I don't think so.
No, Chris. That's who I think.
He played at Colorado?
1936 and 1937.
Yeah, then I think
Byron
Chris
Whizzer
is right.
White, because he went on
Good
to become
call.
A Supreme Court Justice,
all right?
Right?
Who else?
Joe Roeming played in the late 50s into the 60s. Bobby Anderson playing in the late 60s. Salaam, his was retired in 2017.
Okay.
And then it's Sanders and Hunter.
Wow.
Stewart's got to be on there. I'll just say it again. Hunter deserved, and I hate that I'm doing, I think, probably the same take Pony has on this right down to the last syllable. Deion Sanders, or Shedeur Sanders, is getting his number retired because he's Deion's kid. And there's an argument, I guess, I've seen made today that, hey, would you have thought about Colorado football ever again if Deion, Shedeur, and Hunter hadn't gone there? No, you probably wouldn't have. They were the complete doldrums of college football, the drizzling you-know-whats. That doesn't mean that Shedeur was good enough in his 2 years there to warrant a number being retired. Hunter, yes. Shedeur, no.
How about Joel Steed?
He should be, too.
How about Deion Figures?
We First just got Steelers, pick. 90s legends.
How about Chad Brown?
How many guys did they draft out of that school?
Well, you had a run of first-round picks that were from Colorado. Chris just brought up one, Johnson. Figures.
And then they were still plumbing all of Colorado. Joe Peasy from Colorado State.
Yeah, they were all about that.
Well, they did win the national championship in 1990, so they were a hell of a college football program for a number of years.
Was that a year where they had a tie and they ended up, beating out Notre Dame for it?
Wasn't Clark Hagans also a Colorado
Hagans
State?
Was Colorado yes, State.
Let's see.
I thought that 1990 Colorado team had like one of those weird national title runs.
They did
where
have
there was
a tie.
Some dispute. Who'd they tie?
Well, wasn't there a fifth down scenario?
Against what? Missouri?
Let's see here.
Zura.
They beat Notre Dame 10-9 in the Orange Bowl to win the national championship.
That's
that
what
year.
I'm remembering.
They lost to Illinois by a point. They tied Tennessee the first week of the season, 31-31.
Didn't Georgia Tech claim a national title in 1990? Yeah, they claimed one that year. So it was a split title. They were 11-0-1 as well.
Washington and Miami received votes. Yes, I loved when college football used to be so...
We'd have the bowl coalition poll and things of that nature.
People have always bitched and complained about college football. It's hilarious.
And they will continue to bitch
and
complain.
Yes, it's always been a sport where people have said this is a dumb thing. whether it's the way we pick a national champion, how players get compensated, what coaches decide to do, what conference a school plays in. I mean, it's been that way forever since Teddy Roosevelt wanted to like ban the sport because people were dying from like hurting each other so much playing it.
Man, Virginia was number one for part of that year. And Georgia Tech comes from out of nowhere to beat Virginia at Virginia, jumps nine spots. They beat Virginia Tech 6-3 as the seventh-ranked team, then beat Nebraska in the Citrus Bowl and claim a title.
Yeah, now that we're on the topic of college football, you know it's a crazy stat? In 1985, I think Pitt won three games.
Mm-hmm.
Or excuse me, in 1984, they won three games. And then in the 85 draft, they had two guys that went in the top five. Donnie, can you name them?
Wait, read that again.
In 1984, Pitt won three games. They were a horrible football team. But in that spring's draft, they had two guys that went in the top five. Can you name them?
It's not Frelick, is it?
Yep.
Yeah, Frelick. There's one of them, yeah.
I know Marino never went in the top 20, or top five, and he was the year before anyway.
It's like Dolman?
Yes, Chris
Great
Dolman.
Call.
And what happened was, so the Browns pick was supposed to be two. But the Browns ended up using their pick in the supplemental draft instead on Bernie Kosar.
Didn't Bernie Kosar force the supplemental draft to even come into existence?
Yes, because he filed his papers
late on
purpose.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I just got done reading that story.
Yes, insane. By the way, in the 90 draft, the Cowboys were supposed to have the first pick, but they too used a pick in the supplemental draft on quarterback Steve Walsh. So the supplemental draft used to actually be a big deal.
So what was Bernie Kosar's I don't remember reading too deep into his motivations for intentionally.
He wanted to go back and play in Cleveland. He wanted to be close to home.
Okay.
So the number two pick ended up being Minnesota, but Bill Frelick hated the Vikings because their owner was so cheap. So Ralph Sindrich, the agent from here, told the Vikings owner that if they picked him, Frelick had become friends with Bruno Sammartino.
He was going to pro wrestling.
And was
going to
go wrestle.
Yeah, I remember that.
He was part of the
that.
NFL WWF Battle Royal.
So what happened was the Falcons traded the second pick the Vikings traded the second pick to the Falcons. So the Falcons moved up the two and picked Frelick. And then the Falcons gave Frelick the Bobby Bonilla contract, where he was getting paid millions of dollars post-playing career. And Minnesota moved down to four and picked Chris Dolman. So in the end, Minnesota,
do you know what's
it worked out. They got a Hall of Fame pass rusher.
I mean, do you know what's just funny about that? The more things change, more they stay the same. Even back then, Pitt, team that struggled in terms of win-loss and just churning
out great players.
Real, legitimate, big-time NFL players. I'm just proud of myself that I got the Byron Wizard White thing right. That's got me bouncing around here.
Donnie
like
just
Rory
got Frelick and Dolman right.
I gave him Frelick. Come on. Would you have gotten Frelick? I think you would have.
Yeah.
I think you would have nailed that one. I would not have gotten Dolman. I don't know why. The timeline was off there for me.
That 85 draft had Bruce Smith, Chris Dolman, and Kevin Green in it.
Jeez, dude.
How about that for pass rushers?
All in the first round?
No, I don't think Kevin Green was a first-round pick.
Where does Bruce Smith rank among all-time NFL defensive players? Because I feel like when we talk about, you know,
top 15.
Whenever I would bring up, though, Aaron Donald, and I would say, I think he's the best ever. Like, unpopular opinion, whatever. I would get Lawrence Taylor as the obvious quick rebuttal. Reggie White. And I feel like Bruce Smith, for all he accomplished, as a 3-4 end, by the way, never really got mentioned prominently by people as, hey, you're kind of sleeping on Bruce Smith here.
Yeah, I would.
You've got to be close to top 10.
I would want to go top 5 or 10, probably closer to top 10.
I don't know if I can name 9 better.
I think we could name like 3 or 4 Steelers defensive players all time who we think are better.
I mean, was Jack Ham better than Bruce Smith?
4-1-2, no. I'd say Bruce Smith was probably better, but Jack Ham.
Well, you know where I stand.
I don't know. That's actually
though. I would put Joe Green ahead of Bruce Smith.
Of course.
I don't know how many other. I don't know if I could put Blunt or Woodson or Jack Ham ahead of him all time. And I think Woodson's obviously like right around that top.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.